Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's special guest, we have Marco from Analog Things. Hey, Marco.
Hey, everybody.
Hey!
Thanks for joining us. And happy Polaroid week, everybody.
Yeah, that's like my week.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It really is. Yeah.
But before we get into everything, can you give everybody a background on yourself and how you got into photography?
Yeah, so my name is Marco. I live in Vienna. I have been taking pictures, let's say like this, for the last 15 to 20 years. Wow. I started out completely digital, which is the strange part. I was a lot into concert photography, like music was the thing I was living for, to be honest. And at some point, I just got bored from digital photography, and that was the point I got my first Polaroid camera. And from that moment, it just immediately took off. After like 1 year after I got my first Polaroid camera, I jumped into 8x10 photography, which was a massive jump, to be honest. And then after shooting 2 years with the 8x10, I jumped on the 20x24 Polaroid.
Wow.
And was operating that for 2 years. And now I'm running my YouTube channel as a side project next to my job, which is called Analog Things, where I do like mostly instant photography related stuff up till now, but that should actually change hopefully soon.
Wow.
So I think that's kind of the short summary.
So is the big what is it, 20x24, is that what it is? Is that in Vienna or where?
There's actually one in Vienna that's in at Supersense, which is the new project of Doc Florian Cups, who's the Polaroid saver.
Yes.
It's an analog palace where there is vinyl cutting, photography, 20x24, 8x10. There is food, there's smell, there's printing, there's everything on the kind of analog level. That's his concept of the project. And I was there starting out with the project with him and like setting up this photography corner for him, like kind of, and operating the 20x24 at the beginning.
Wow.
Sounds like a dream.
Yeah, I've been...
It can be, but it's also a hard job.
Sure. Like,
yeah. Man, I've been wanting to get my hands on that big Polaroid for a long time.
Yeah, it's like there's Oliver Bloom, who is actually the operator now. Mm. He actually bought the number 5, or not he, but like he and Markus Mahler, which is standing in Berlin right now. So that's the original 20x24, or one of the original, the number 5, which is funny because it's actually stamped inside of the camera, the number 5.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And like the one at Supersense is actually the Wisner, like it's a clone camera, which has the processor separated from the camera, so it's a different process. Oliver hates to work with that camera because it's really like not fail-safe at all. And
interesting.
It's a beast. Yeah, it's a beast to work with, and like your back hurts, you sweat all over, and like it kills you, to be honest.
Man,
because you're like, it's like when you have the roll of negative in the back in the holder,
you're right.
Just imagine the 8x10 holder where it's like just one sheet of film in there, that's already like a few grams.
Mm-hmm.
But the 20x24 holder is full wood and you have the whole 50 meters of negative inside of 60 centimeters wide, so you can imagine how heavy that is.
Yeah
And yeah, you need to lift that up like on kind of like over my head to lock it into the camera, and have to be really gentle with it because it's only held by two little metal things on the side.
Oh, jeez.
So kind of like, it's tricky.
I bet. Man, my last question about the camera.
Don't worry, I know there's too many questions about the camera, but like I know this problem. Yeah.
Do they still make the film for it?
I was just going to say, I was like, is this a dumb question?
Are you guys like working on old stock?
It's all original Polaroid chemistry that people are working on. So they have stock for 1 to 2 years, they say, which is like, depends on the traffic, depends on the projects they get. Like if now somebody discovers that and some artist and kind of wants to make like a huge project and has the funding, it could be gone in 1 month, to be honest.
Sure.
Also, like, it's chemistry. We know how film reacts. Polaroid is especially sensitive to like, drying, since it's filled, and we don't have the chemistry separated from the film. If we have a roll film, we have no problem. If it's expired, it has a little bit of color tint or something like that. But Polaroid, if the chemistry dries, you got bricks inside of it.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, and so that's also one of the problems. Also, there's different chemistries. One positive thing is 20x24 studios in New York actually still have the chemistry in barrels. Which they fill into the pots, so that's actually fresh chemistry.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of where, like, the biggest amount of chemistry is left in New York, actually.
Man, what?
That's I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What a sad day when that's all gone. Like, oh.
I mean, like, Impossible would actually have the chance to produce that film again. They can do the same with 20x24 like they did with 8x10. It's possible. Right. I think there was already some prototypes at some point at the beginning.
Okay.
That's just rumors. I don't know that too exactly. But it would be possible for them to produce one, but it would also be integral film, not peel apart film.
Mm-hmm.
So, there could be a nice black and white integral
film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why not? Man. Yeah.
And, like, that would be my dream to shoot, like, Impossible 20x24 and then make an immersion lift of that.
Oh yeah, for
in
sure.
In a bathtub or something like that.
Yeah.
I
was just telling Timothy, your emulsion lift video inspired me to do mine. So thank you for that, because I haven't done an emulsion lift. We did it. We had like one class at photography school, and I remember being like the most excited for that class because it came at the end of the year too.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, we're doing emulsion lifts, like at the end, and like it was a 10-month program, and I was just like waiting to like do the emulsion lift at the last, like one of the last
classes. That's the only reason you went.
That's the only reason I went. Exactly.
It's such a beautiful technique, like having this picture floating in front of you in the water. It's just like. That's why when I built for the video, like I recorded, I built actually an acrylic tank just so I could film it like lit from below so you see it floating.
Yeah.
And like I built it and like it was dripping all the time while I recorded onto the softbox. And I was like, please don't die. Please don't die.
Yeah, your video was much more well produced than mine. I think I was like, I had my camera just on the side and I was like, you know, with a paintbrush, I'm like, I don't know if this is in frame or not.
it's tricky, but the good thing is like it's hard to mess it up as soon as you have it in water and you're safe.
Yeah.
But like the 8x10 is really easy to rip apart. That's like when I started out, the chemistry was so thin, the layer from Impossible, that I had like a lot of portraits just whoosh, rip apart into pieces, and then you're like, oh, okay. Because I actually did portraits of musicians, so I went with all my 8x10 equipment, with the Broncolor strobes, and with the whole lifting equipment to the like venues, set
no
up backstage,
way. No
did the portraits,
way.
And then did the lift there, like immediately. I mean, it was crazy, like these musicians seeing that technique, and they were like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet they were blown away. They were just like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, it's like, he's strange. But yeah, that was such an effort, and most of the times just did it alone, so yeah, like there was like about 200 kilograms of equipment, like where do I put all of that?
So did you take more than one portrait in case like it ripped, or you were like one this
no,
is it
just like one portrait of one person?
That's so nerve-wracking if you're like there at the venue and you're like, okay, here we go, and it's just like
especially if it's bigger bands that they're like the singer, like most of them don't have a lot of time or they have press meetings before.
Right, exactly.
We have a schedule. You have like 3 minutes. Can you take like the picture? And then sometimes you have like the craziest people and they take forever, like and like take time. Like we did, I did a series with Wet Plates with a friend of mine where he did actually the photography, the portraits, and I did the chemistry because alone it wouldn't be handled. And we took pictures of Slipknot.
Oh, whoa.
Wow.
And actually, like, James was the most chilled person. He and his girlfriend they just hang out for like 1 hour with us, and like it were easy. And then there was like Sid, he was coming after the show just in boxers, just sitting down, sitting there 5 minutes, not talking. And we were like, okay, that's crazy. But they were like super nice people. It's just like they didn't think about the process taking so long, so we didn't have time to take pictures of all of them, sadly.
So are those portraits anywhere online where we could check out? I need to look at those.
I have to see. I think there's some of them are not allowed to be published.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, management can then be tricky.
Oh, yeah.
Very true. Have to have a perfect collodion wet plate, which is hard to get of them at a venue, and then you can't release it.
Oh, all that work, and then you can't do anything with it.
Because management doesn't even reply. Or stuff like that happens if you do projects like that.
Yeah.
You have to live with that. But we got a really beautiful one of Eagles of Death Metal and Josh Holm, actually. These turned out amazing.
Man.
Yeah.
I still need to... I really want to get into wet plate stuff. I need, like, a buddy to do it with me, though. I don't think I could...
Yeah.
I mean, I probably could figure it all out on my own, but it's so much easier when you have, like, a partner, you know, kind of... Or somebody that is veteraned with it, that knows what they're doing, can show me.
It's actually
kind of
like
what's up.
The problem is a lot of people, in my opinion, take it so easy. But you have to keep in mind that's really like dangerous chemistry you're working with.
Oh yeah.
Stuff
oh yeah.
Can kill you easily, or like not that in a minute, but on long term. And I think a lot of people underestimate the danger of that technique. It's not gone for no reason.
Right.
yeah. Wow, I never really even thought of that. You're right.
That's
crazy.
Something like, and also, I would really recommend a space where you can destroy the floor. Because these collodion stains, they stay. I did it once in my bathroom, and my like washing machine still has the stains of that stuff.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, can't recommend doing it at home. You really need a studio space to do that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Man, good to know.
But like absolutely an amazing technique. And there's like, if you're in Europe, I know there's one company in Prague that actually sells complete kits where you don't have to mix the chemistry yourself. You can just buy the collodion. You can buy the developers and everything. And you just have like your 5 bottles and do the stuff and don't need to mix your stuff at home. So if you want to try it out, that's really cool. I think they're called Mammut Photo or something like that. They're from Prague. So yeah, that's really interesting.
Good to know.
Actually.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, that sounds a little more my speed, because I don't think I can destroy my little apartment that I live in with collodion.
Yeah, you need so much stuff if you start mixing that chemistry yourself and everything. Yeah, it's like, I kind of stopped with it because of that, because it's, I went back to Polaroid.
Which, you know, kind of is in, it feels like it's in the same family. Like, it's almost like an alternative process, but not like alternative process and a little, you know, 3x5x4
It's instant photography, to be honest. You only have that 10 minutes to take that image, actually, and then you develop it and it's done.
Right, it's there.
It's an instant technique. Impossible pictures, or like Polaroid pictures, color take longer to develop than like wet plate. That's honest. That's funny. Yeah. And like, I actually got into wet plate and Polaroid because I had a project idea where I wanted an image that's not reproducible. And Polaroid and wet plate are actually the only techniques, in my opinion, that are not really reproducible, that give you a unique image every time.
Right.
Control that chemistry. I mean, dry blade would be the same, but dry blade making is even harder than wet plate.
That's one of the reasons why I love Polaroid originals, is because it's like very unique in the sense of like, it's like we've talked about like Instax, it's like you put the flash on, you're going to get the same sort of image. But with Polaroid, you know, with originals, it's like, going to be a different shade depending on the temperature and all that, which is the best in my opinion.
At the moment, I'm working on one project where I actually prefer the Instax film because I need the consistency of that film.
And
I'm using the Mint camera, I'm using the RF70.
The new guy.
The
Mint, yes. And since it's the perfect camera for double exposure, because it doesn't eject the image, you really need to crank the side camera.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I knew that. Yeah.
To like throw out the image, and that gives us. Let me like 1 second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can just show you a peek what we did today, because there was a little photo walk today with Lomography, and we did some images. That's kind of the thing I'm working on at the moment.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's great. Yeah, it looks great.
That's kind of like Carson's stuff that we just had Carson on, and he was doing stuff like that too. Man, that's really cool.
So, that's stuff like, wrong side, like this.
So cool.
Oh, wow. So, I want to do stuff like that.
And I'm currently actually working on a tripod mount on the tripod mount for the RF, which gives me a perfect 180 degree turn.
Oh, smart.
So
smart.
It should be like half of a circle where I can turn it around. Let's see if that works out.
How do you like that camera?
Actually, I'm pretty impressed by it. I recently got 2 comments on YouTube of people that didn't have a good quality of the camera.
Really?
So something wasn't that right. It was the plastic. I think the screw for them wasn't like too holding too good, but it's actually like it's really molten into the plastic, so don't know what, like maybe something went wrong in production or something, I don't
right.
know.
Mm.
But since I got one of the first ones, I'm just impressed by the camera, and like it's easy to use. The Instax film is so cheap, it's like
right.
Yeah,
I just
it's
bought
so
a few
cheap.
Packs today, and it's 20 shots for 15 euros here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, if I buy Polaroid Originals film, it's like 8 shots, which I don't know what, like if 8 shots actually work.
Sure.
To be
yeah.
honest. Not,
oh, yeah.
Not yep. even for me. And then you sometimes get the flames inside of them, which mm-hmm. for that project would be horrible, in my opinion. I need a clean image. And if
yeah.
I have like
yeah.
the flames inside, it's just destroying. I mean, I love expired film, but that's something that I really can't live with for a certain project.
Yeah.
And also, double exposure is always a danger that you mess it up. It's always.
Yeah.
The exposure with Instax, Instax has such a small tolerance in the exposure, especially the Fuji Instax. That's crazy. Like, you just expose a little bit too much and everything is messed
yeah.
up. That's
mm-hmm.
really
so
strange.
True. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the DRF actually does an amazing job on the auto mode, also on manual mode. What I love is, like, you got these little ND filters since the film is ISO 800. Oh, let me see. Yeah, so I printed this little holder here, which screws on top of the
oh,
camera.
Cool.
Oh,
and
smart.
And holds both of the ND filters. Well, there's actually three, but I only used the two of them.
Hmm.
So yeah, so I just, like, screw that on the bottom of the camera, and I'm ready to go and always have to fix
yeah,
this
with
me.
That's great.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So it's really, that... Is that camera, like, readily available? Like, is it for sale? Because I remember last I saw it was, like, in production and all that stuff. Is it, like, a limited thing, or can anyone just pick it up?
They still haven't set up a real production line, to be honest. So
you
kind of need to be in that, like, early funding thing and register, and then you can buy it, and then it's probably there in 3 months or something like that. That's
okay.
what I think it is at the moment.
Yeah, because I see myself needing one of those as well.
But, yeah, you can actually, like... to be honest, Mint has an amazing customer service, or like they're really nice and responsive. So you just drop the message, ask them stuff. I also know Thomas. He has had like 2 Mint S670 cameras, which are really good products.
Right.
Yeah.
They work amazingly. You have manual, and now they brought out the X with the flash sync. If you're a tinkerer and you want to do that yourself, you can look at the Open S670 project, which you've probably seen on my channel.
Yeah,
where mm-hmm. I desoldered the PCB of the Polaroid and then soldered in a new one. But I would all recommend this to somebody who has a spare S670.
Right,
really,
yeah, exactly.
Willing to mess it up, actually. Because that's like, it's small welding. And if you're soldering, but if you're not into soldering, it's like, I wouldn't actually give it a try. I would go with the finished project from Mint and just like, okay, I got the perfect camera.
That would be me.
That leaves me out for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I said, like Thomas, even he had like 2 of them, and he wrote them to switch for an X, and I think they actually did deal. So he got a new camera and like switched back 2 old ones. Like, yeah, they're pretty nice when it comes to stuff like that. And they also have like this crazy, they also have this crazy thing, which is like that film for free. Don't know if you have seen
what
that.
Is that?
No, I didn't
That's
see that.
That's actually like really strange. I didn't know how Gary does it, but you can actually order to your RF70 or to your TL70 like film for free, which is you have to publish a picture, I think, taken with the camera. And if you have at least 30 likes or something on Instagram, for every 3 or 5 pictures you take, you get another free pack.
Oh, whoa.
Instax film. And it's like, okay. And that I asked him, like, and that's working financially? And she's like, Instax film is really cheap.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, good. So, yeah, I mean, it's a nice idea, actually. He has some marketing of it. Like, mm-hmm. people share the film.
Yeah.
Like, why not get advantage? Like, if you already share it, just tag Mint and get a free film.
Right.
Yeah,
marketing
for
it. That's good stuff.
Yeah. It helps both sides, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
I was just going to say the Polaroid One Step Plus version has mm-hmm. the double exposure. So I messed around a little bit with the double exposure on the Polaroid Original. It was fun. It came out
it's
pretty
fun.
Cool. Yeah.
I can't stand the mobile phone control.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for me. Like, I need my both hands on the camera, or at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have to do, like, one hand.
Yeah. That, especially with the 180 degrees that I showed you just, mm-hmm. like, it doesn't mm-hmm. work.
Right.
Like, yeah, how? So I would actually need a second person holding the phone.
I have a camera around.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. I'm not a fan of that concept of using a phone to control it, even though it gives you amazing options with there's so many
extra options, like the shutter manual release, mode. manual mode.
It's like really good. But yeah, I'm not a fan of phone control of an analog camera because it makes the camera obsolete in a foreseeable future. Because that's an app. How many apps do you know that are developed for 20 years?
Sure, you're right. I guess we haven't gotten that far yet with apps.
Yeah. It's like, to be honest, in 10 years, I can't imagine somebody is able to control that camera with his phone again.
Hmm.
Yeah, I wish they would have put some more buttons on it. Yeah. I don't have that one. I don't have the Bluetooth version. I have two of the, just the regular One Touch 2s. So... Mm-hmm. And if I really like them too. They're a lot of fun.
Viewfinder or not?
What's that?
Do you have the upgraded viewfinder or?
Oh
not?
Yeah, I don't.
Because that I don't helps think my, a lot.
Yeah.
My white one doesn't. My white one is like the original version, and then the black one that I got that is newer. That one has the upgraded.
Yeah, that helps a lot in framing.
It does.
I was going to ask you: does it? Is it a big difference, Timothy? Or are you guys use Marco too?
So in my opinion, it is a big difference. Yes, sorry. Mm. Yeah. It's like, the problem is like when you hold that camera to your face, you immediately start putting your cheek on the camera, which is the angle, and it pushes you aside. And you always tilt the camera when you look through it. So framing too much right.
Yeah, I've gotten used to trying to adjust it.
Also with the S670, framing is also kind of tricky, to be honest, in my opinion. Because looking through the viewfinder is always like, okay, look right, or it's like it's sometimes a little bit strange.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. I didn't really pick up on that for a while until I'm borrowing one of the Mint 670s, I think that's what it is, with the Time Machine on it.
Yep.
And my buddy Mike, he was just like, yeah, so there's a little, you gotta, you know, kind of focus a little bit down and to the right or something like that he was saying to get the image in. And I never noticed that before. And I was like, that's why my pictures are out of frame all the time. I never really caught on to that.
They're always a little bit shifted to the right side. I don't
know. Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But yeah, that's Polaroid. To be honest, nothing is perfect.
True.
It's fun, though. Like, it's so much fun. I just got a Sun 660 with the sonar, the little sonar dot on it. I got it for Polaroid Week. I'm going to try to do some stuff for Polaroid Week. And I just love their sonar system. I've never had any issues with it where, you know, of course we're going to miss shots on autofocus from the, you know, 80s and 90s and stuff. There's going to be some miss shots. But I've always had a good time shooting that. And I tested a pack in the last 2 days. I burned through a pack. And, man, just the images that come out of that camera are just so great. I'm having so much fun just shooting like a point and shoot Polaroid. It's a good time.
Yeah, you've been on a roll.
Oh yeah, I'm loving it.
My favorite is actually the 680 or 690. These are just amazing cameras because they shoot the 600 film. They have the autofocus. They have a built-in flash. They're really good lenses. These are my favorite lenses cameras.
Yeah.
But the problem is they're kind of hard to get sometimes. Pricey, and they have the most electronics inside, which makes them not very safe, to be honest.
I'll have to look into those. Those are ones that I haven't really got.
Yeah, I haven't gotten
into my radar.
Mm-hmm.
You have to check them out. They're really amazing to take instant shots because you get the 600 film, which is the more available film, to be honest. It's the more produced film.
It is.
Most selling. That's where PO also puts more of the development effort into.
Yeah.
Because it's their big sales point. I love that camera. It combines the 600 with the S670 and adds a flash on top, which is useful, so you don't have to buy the Mint flash and run around and put it on top. And the balance, the Mint flash is nice, but it's not really on the perfect white balance for me. It's a little bit cooler. It's not the same light.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I love old GE Electronics flashes. They give you the perfect color. They look just amazing. And I still have a full box of them sitting around, which I actually last time I was recording a new intro for the channel or still in the making, and I just recorded a lot of old bulbs, lighting up in slow motion.
Oh, cool, cool, cool.
So I'm kind of like, it's so hard to film that because it's really fast and I only had like these 120 FPS and you get not a lot of it. But it looks really cool. It makes interesting effect when you see like this metal burning and then also the glass melting around it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a bunch of those. One of the cameras I got, it was like an older camera. I got it like a flea market or yard sale or something like that. Came with a box of those. But yeah, I love that. I love that old technology. It's so good.
Yeah, it gives us different results that we are not used to see today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like, I had the discussion today with one guy about like lomography lenses, which they produce these Petzval lenses now and everything. And they also have a lot of instant cameras, mm-hmm. If you haven't seen them, but they're like pretty good ones, to be honest, some of them. And these new digital lenses, they are just all perfect, which kind of takes away all the feeling of an image or this like something. They're not transporting anything to me. They're just perfect.
And right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a fan of perfection, so.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So that's like modern lenses are not that good in my opinion. And Lomo has like these Petzval lenses which have their defects. I mean, they're pricey for lenses that have failures, but they give you a different feel and different look that some people are actually looking for. And mm-hmm. maybe that's the thing you actually want for a project or for your style of pictures. So yeah, it's always interesting to look into that and not always buy the best Canon, Nikon, whatever lens that is on the market, a 2.8, mm-hmm. perfectly, no vignetting, to the edge, sharp, and everything straightens. Like, sometimes it's good to buy the cheap M42 mm-hmm. lens that's 60 years old, that's vignetting, that has a yellow tint, and it's still an amazing lens.
No, I agree completely. I was just talking to these customers. They're regulars at this restaurant that I work at, and they came in and they were like, "Oh, we saw you at, you know, so and so, and you had this big camera with you. And are you a photographer?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, like I mean, I don't say I'm like, you know, I'm not like a pro crazy, yeah. you know, whatever, but I was like, I love to shoot, you know, I co-host a film photography podcast. Like, I'm really involved in the analog photography." And they're just like, "So film is still, you can still get film?" And I'm like, "Oh," I was like, "you'd be surprised." I was like, "We just had on our show, you know, one of the top 20 wedding photographers in mm-hmm. the world, and he shoots all film, like all of his weddings." And they're just like, "That just seems like so much work." And it's like, well, no, it's like, it's a look and a feeling, and there's so much more to it. And it's like, yeah, you can get the new Canon 1DX Mark whatever with this lens, and you can zoom into everyone's pores until you see the, you know, like, who wants to see that much perfection? Like, there's a point where it just gets like, it's too much. I don't know. I was trying to explain that to them as well, and they were like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense." That I was like, "It's a look and a feel. It's like a vintage record you put on that you listen to, and you listen to it because you want the pops and the hiss and the cracks and the skipping and stuff. Like, that stuff's what we love about it." So
that it's like, yeah, I also love to combine or like take the music and photography to see things that are actually like in the same. For example, ISO mm-hmm. and yes. music for me, like, and sound is for me a really interesting thing to combine. If you turn up the volume on your like speakers, it will sound trashy, but you will still hear something. But if you do the same on your film or like your camera, if you turn up the ISO, it looks shit, but you still see something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like such a nice idea to combine, or like to actually say audio and photo, they have similarities. And
very
it's like,
true.
It works the same.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I love that analogy. I'm gonna be using that from now on. Just so. Thanks.
It's actually like, yeah, I'm recording currently a series of basics of photography.
Which I
kind of want to bring out, like what's aperture, what's shutter, mm-hmm. What's ISO, how to combine these and stuff like that, and what's like which millimeters of a lens, what does it actually make the focal lengths and stuff like that. And that's also one of the pieces from there. It's like some pieces that I kind of bring in there to explain people the real basics of photography, because I think that's missing a lot in the web. Really basic approach to teach photography.
Sure. Yeah. Is that coming to your channel?
Yeah, that's going to be done on the channel.
Oh, cool.
I mean, I wanted to like put it on Skillshare, but I think it's just done. Yeah. But there's also one thing, like, easiest way to show the function of an Apache. Take one liter of water, take two cylinders, like, I don't like the English word, and like one is a small diameter, one is a big diameter, and then just pour 1 liter of water through it. One will take longer, one will take shorter. And that's actually like super easy to show what an Apache does.
Yeah.
It changes the time you need to expose the same amount, or like take the same amount of light and bring it to your sensor, to the other side.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I had that analogy when I first started, because aperture for everybody is like, wait,
it's
the bigger
super hard
the number,
to get into it,
smaller the hole, or like, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like super easy to say, okay, you have a small hole, the light takes longer to get through it, so you need to adjust the shutter at some point to get the same time. Super easy, super cool analogy to just like figure out stuff like that. I try to put that into the videos in the future, so let's see if that works out and maybe people understand it.
Man, I remember when all that stuff clicked to me. Mm-hmm. One day I was just, you know, shooting with a friend, and he was losing it because I was like, I get it. I get the ISO, the aperture, and the shutter speed. Like, if you change one, you can, I mean, they all do the same thing in a way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like, if you move this one, it just, he was losing it. He was laughing at me because I'm like, I figured it out. Finally, I get it. Like,
I think that's really that one moment where you're like,
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. Now it makes sense.
Yes. I'll never forget that day. It was just such a good experience.
But it's a learning curve. Everybody has to go through it, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
It's just
going
from automatic to manual.
Right.
You need to figure that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Marco, I also noticed you recently went to Photokino. How was that?
Yeah, last year. And it was good for building connections and horrible for...
Oh, no.
Seeing stuff. I mean, it's just like there's so much Chinese products.
Yeah.
There is like the big players like Nikon, Canon. They have stages massively built, huge things. And you're there like, oh, we have analog. It's like a little chamber.
A little bubble.
Yeah.
And like, but people said like it was the first time for me to be at Photokina. And people said it's much better with analog photography. Now there's actually like, people there, like Cena Still was there, Addox was there, like the Camera Rescue guys were there. So like a lot of some kind of people were there, and it was really nice to actually meet some people in like really see them in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
talk with
so
them.
Is the best.
Yeah, that was actually the best to meet the people, to get connections, and talk with people about ideas. And honestly, for me, that's too crowded there. Like I don't like stuff like that. I was there and was thinking about recording a video, and I didn't feel at all to even pull out the camera at one point. But yeah, it's nice to get connections and meet people. That's a thing I would say stuff like that is good for.
Yeah, I used to go to the one in New York. Not it wasn't Photokina, but I forgot the name of it. But the at the Javits Center every year, and it was basically all digital at that. I think there was like one Kodak booth there. But it's still cool to like be around, like you said, like make those connections, be around people who are like, you know, the same, have the same mindset and stuff like that. But I haven't been to something like that in such a long time. It's probably been like, let's see, since I moved to LA. So like 6-7 years. And I would love to go back to another convention just because it's exciting, you know, walking around the convention center floor. And
it's always interesting to see different people, how they actually handle cameras and stuff like that. That's for me, it's like always like a user, you wear it over your neck, you have to show it off.
Yep.
And there's like stuff like that, but it's interesting, yeah. And this like one thing that really tripped me up was like somebody coming to me, aren't you Analog Things? And I was like, yes.
Oh, cool. You got recognized. That's nice.
It was at that point. I was like, okay, I should watch out what I do in public.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
But yeah, that was also like, it was funny, but also kind of weird because I was in the middle of a conversation and somebody just dropped in and completely cut off the conversation.
Oh, no way. What?
Yeah, and I was like, okay, thank you very much.
Too funny.
Jeez.
But yeah, that's people that don't understand boundaries.
Sure.
In some cases.
Too funny.
Happens, and you have to go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
So yeah, that Photokina, I mean, for Polaroid, actually, there was only Lomography and Fuji Instax. but Polaroid Originals wasn't actually there.
Oh,
no.
Strange thing, to be honest. But yeah, they concentrated on CES, and yeah, so they didn't even have a booth at Photokina.
That's a bummer. Yeah, I was just going to ask if Polaroid was even there.
Nope. Also, I think they're going through a lot of business changes since they're moving to Amsterdam now.
Oh, are they?
Oh.
Yeah, the office is moving from Berlin to Amsterdam. So it was Vienna, then Berlin, now it's Amsterdam. And
crazy.
Let's see what happens with them, actually. Like, I hope they... I think they will survive as a company. But Instax is pushing a lot of pressure on them.
Right, right.
Oh man, I would be devastated
Me
if we
too.
Lost that film
Me
again.
Too.
I can't.
Can you
I can't even think of that.
Going through it twice. Ugh.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe Doc finds another solution then and buys Polaroid Originals again or something like that. I don't
Come
know.
Come on, Doc.
I know. He's like the hero of the community. Speaking of Doc, can you give us any, like, is there, like, how did, I know the project got funded for the Pull Apart film. How are they doing since it's been funded?
I haven't actually talked with them a lot in the last 3 months. I've been busy.
Got it. I was hoping for some inside info.
Yeah, give us the dirt.
I can't tell you any inside info because I actually don't have one. I wasn't really too much involved in the project. I was just there for the video to help them shoot it.
Got it.
And give them some feedback. But till then, like after that, I actually jumped out and I haven't talked with them too much. So I hope it's going good. I know they had to build up a whole dark room there, which last time I was there was looking really good.
Wow.
And they had to set up a complete assembly line where everything is going to be built and assembled and everything.
Right.
So stuff like that needs to be figured out. They needed to set up a new location kind of close to Supersense where all the production's taking place and stuff like that. So they had to figure out a lot. But since the film is actually just Polaroid film, or it's original Polaroid film and original Polaroid chemistry, that works. The first batch will work, kind of.
Yeah.
The only thing is, after that, if they really manage to source a good quality and like negative and like positive, and like if they really manage to take that basic funding for the next to the next level, or if it's just going to be selling the currently like batch of film they have and sell the material.
Interesting.
All these films that people will get is 20 by 24 material.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I mean, that makes sense.
yeah.
It's 20 by 24 film cut into pieces.
Huh.
Yeah.
And the chemistry put into small little packages.
I feel like that's kind of how the new 55 stuff was, too.
It is. It's the same. It's completely the same. Yeah.
Wow.
Man, I was so bummed that kind of fizzled out. I really, really, really love shooting Type 55 or Type 59 or any kind of type Polaroid film. It's so much fun with 4x5.
Yeah, I love seeing a sheet for Polaroid film. It's just amazing.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, you get a negative and a positive, and it's just such a great concept. Like, I just can't believe that this stuff... It makes me mad almost that these companies... That these companies just let this stuff die.
Yeah.
Like, not so much these people trying to resurge it, you know, like giving up on it or whatever, but like Polaroid just blowing it with that. And I mean, I get it, it's a numbers game, it's about money, but I mean, this is it's literal magic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, taking something like that and making an image with it come alive in front of your eyes, it is magic. You know, like that is as close to real magic as we could possibly get.
It was a strange thing that 4x5 was actually one of the first factories that it was destroyed.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like stomped into the ground.
And it's man.
Okay, it's gone. Good. So, yeah, I understand, like, that film is not easy to make. I mean, and like...
Oh, no.
You need machines to build it. And then the problem is, okay, building a machine... is maybe not that hard, but like developing a machine that is able to do that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And everything. I just know that from Uwe, which is one of the people working at the Type 100 Kickstarter project. He's responsible for developing that paper folding thing. And he has this company called... how is it called? Oh, damn. I forgot the name. He's like taking the same principle like CineSteel does. Taking cinema film and cutting off the chat on the back, and he's doing the same in Vienna with old films, and he has like this one film which is for audio files, which has all the numbers imprinted, for example, and stuff like that.
Oh wow, that's cool.
And yeah, that's like stuff like that. he also says, like, yeah, he can 3D print stuff, but it doesn't work that long. You know, it's mechanical parts, they break, and then you need to machine it and everything, and then you need somebody who's really into process management, and it just takes over at some point. And I understand it's an amazing investment, and that's not even talking about the chemistry.
Sure.
I just wish, like, it wasn't so expensive to, if we could get the cost down of, like, the machinery that needs to be made, you know, and the space, like, I don't know, man. It's like the future now. Like, this stuff was doable back then. Like, how is it not cheaper and easier to do now in this time? You know what I mean? Like, how have we not? There's some stubborn people out there that are making it different.
With the chemistry, you will understand why the chemistry is not around anymore.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
like, it's like you have it on your skin and you don't see it, maybe the developer, but man, 10 minutes later and you have no skin left there.
Yeah.
It's like it's aggressive chemistry.
I get it.
It's really aggressive stuff sometimes. So yeah, I understand why it's gone and there needs to be other ways. But the problem is that, like, looking into it, it's not the main objective anymore.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the sad truth about Polaroid. No, but like, I'm lucky I still have like a lot of film I've reached, which is a good and a bad thing. Because actually, even if it's stored really well and well, like, climated and everything, that stuff is drying out on me and I need to shoot it now. Because it's actually, if the film is drying out, every pack I take, it's like one more picture that's not working.
So, yeah, I guess it's like incentive to like get out there and just...
Yeah.
I mean, I talked about this when we were talking to Lumography folks. I've been hoarding film, you know, because I want to save it.
Yeah.
Because I'm afraid it's going to go away. But you just got to go shoot it and make the photo and, you know, make a print and put it in a book or put it on the wall. You know what I mean? It's not going to do any good.
Have it for yourself. It's
right. Yeah, it's just no good in the fridge.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And it's the thing, like, I still have Fade to Black film, which is like my favorite film ever. I love that.
Ooh, what's
film,
that?
Which, have you never heard of it?
Mm-mm.
It was a false production of Polaroid.
Oh yeah.
Which fades to black after 24 hours. Like, right. When it came out. But you can actually stop that process if you separate the layers.
Oh, really?
So, oh, yeah, wow. Okay.
You can stop it. Like, just like when you have the image looking like you want it, you just make a transparency and you're done. And the picture stays like that.
Okay.
And that film is, for me, it's gold. I mean, it's gold also. If you look on eBay for the prices of the film, it is gold.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, how much does it go for?
Oh, the craziest I saw was like one pack for 400 euros.
Jeez.
Oh my god.
That was the craziest I saw. But
yeah, that
it's
is
not,
gold
not
right
easy
there.
To find, because it's like it was such a small production.
Mm-hmm.
And I have like three packs left in the fridge. And you know, there's like this blockade in my mind. I kind of want to make a special project with it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you have it's to like, do something like.
Yeah, but then at the thing is like, okay, it's sitting in the fridge for 5 years. Like, when is the point? Where is the project that I feel like it's good enough for that film.
I was gonna say, at that point, put the pack of film in a frame on the walls.
Like that. But yeah, there's also like, I still have a lot of 4x5, and I heard of that one technique which I still haven't tried, and I don't know why, which is liquefying the pots by using condensed water. So you kind of have to put the film into the fridge, put it out of the fridge for the same, and then shorten the time always like by like half, the like always divided by two.
Okay.
And that could probably re-liquefy the chemistry to a certain amount.
Yeah.
But it's like, I still have like, I think 100 sheets of 4x5 that are dry. So why not give it a try?
Exactly.
Yeah, I had a whole pack that was just a bust on me not too long ago. I wish I got frustrated and chucked it in the can. I didn't even save it. But it's just crazy though, because I look every night. It's kind of been my nightly routine lately. Is when I lay down at the end of the night, I grab my iPad and I go on eBay and I look up all the type film, you know, type 55, and you see open packs from 93 for $400, and it's just like, come on. Like, you know that stuff's not good.
Yeah.
But I really want one more successful box of that film, or even any of it. Like, I would take any of it. It doesn't have to be Type 55. If anyone's listening out there, offer me a box of known working Type 55 film. Please.
Yeah, I still have, like, two boxes of 55 left.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just chopped like one of my girlfriend 2 weeks ago. It's still working perfectly.
Yeah. Like, oh man.
Yeah.
I just wish I had two boxes. I have like a little photography guru. It's like this little 90-year-old man that owns the building that I work at, and he was an old wedding photographer, and he'll occasionally come in with like boxes of amazing things for me. And one time it was two boxes of, you know, 2007 or 8 Type 55 film, and it was in the best top frame was a little dried out and didn't spread all the way, mm-hmm. but the rest of them, the other 39 sheets just were gorgeous, but I wish I would have known what I had when I had it. You know, like, I just blew through it and didn't think of it.
To be honest, like, take it that way, maybe you would still be sitting on it and it would be dry now.
See?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Good point.
Yeah, so now you at least have some 55 images. If you would have known, you probably would have stored it in the fridge and still had like 50 sheets in the fridge and like take it out next year and be like, oh, good, now everything is dead.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. So, you're right. I gotta stop looking at the glass half empty. Yeah. You're right.
It's too funny.
I see the problem with me because like I have my like the fridge is half full with Polaroid mm-hmm. film. I go mm-hmm. down, like I went down into my cellar like this week to store like the film I showed you before, like this, all the rolls, and I was looking there and like, damn, I have so much Polaroid film. And I was like, I need to do something with it. I need to shoot more. The problem mm-hmm. is at the moment I really don't get to shoot a lot myself because most of the stuff I do is just record how to shoot like for other people. It's like mm-hmm. I'm not shooting myself anymore, and that's like kind of a bummer, to be honest. And I need to do more projects again and like mm-hmm. kind of get into it and step down the YouTube game a little bit and step up my own game again.
Right, true.
Yeah. That's exactly what I did. I was getting fatigued with shooting for other people and not myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You need to get into your pace again, like, and do it yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And like, yeah, I have a lot of project ideas, but some of them are like too big to really like realize and need funding and stuff like that. And I'm not mm-hmm. really not good at stuff like that.
Yeah, same.
So that's like ideas sitting on the shelf in my book and be like, when I'm old, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Man. So at the moment, it's like, I really need to get out and shoot more. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah.
Same.
Now, next video will be probably about the 8x10 processor that I just bought. Since I now have like all the processors.
I'm excited to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of people want to get into 8x10 photography with Polaroid because it's a nice start. You don't need to have 8x10 film and develop it, which is like a lot of people get confused that you actually can give your whole holder to the lab and they develop it and you don't need to do anything.
Right.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. But Polaroid and 8x10 can be confusing because there's three different kinds of processors. There's two different kinds of like holders, which works with which. What do you need to watch out when you get the processor? And there's actually like these three and two are actually the ones that are regularly available. But there's also a special version that was used for bomb detection. There's one
What?
Yeah, there's one which was used for medical. Like I actually have a 8x10 radiographic processor.
That's nuts.
Which is actually for X-ray machines. It's the same principle. And there's other ones, but the problem is these X-ray machines, they had different holders because they don't need a slide out. They just had like a front plate finished. They don't need anything else.
Wow.
Because
wow.
it just X-rays through it. It has a metal plate in the back. That's it. And crazy. Yeah, so this holder wouldn't work to 8x10 photography, but you could get the processor maybe cheaper. And then try to look for mm-hmm. only a holder. So that's like, it's a complicated topic to find the right solution. I was like, when I bought that stuff, there is like a tray, which is used for one of the holders. And it wasn't like included in the second processor. But if you have the right cassette, which doesn't need a tray, you can use it again. So a lot of things that you have to take into consideration when buying one of these processors and film holders. But
man, yeah I'm excited to see your video on that because that's again something else I want to get into.
Sure. Me too.
Little side note, don't get the field processor.
Okay.
Yeah, because
I heard there's like a crank. A lot of people are using cranks these days. Yeah.
But the field processor is also the one that you can fold up and just like crank it through. But the crank is horrible because it doesn't give you a consistent result. You need the powered one.
Okay.
Impossible Polaroid Originals film is way more sensitive to these rollers. So you really should go for the electric, like electrician, the one that's just like pulling in a consistent level into the camera.
Okay.
Into the processor.
Good to know. Good to know. Cool.
And yeah, as like take a look at old photographers. They mostly have them in the storage and think that's some piece of plastic they're never going to use, and you can get
them
for cheap money.
Yeah.
Like the first processor I bought, I got for 15 euros.
Really? No kidding.
Wow. Yeah.
Actually, I never bought a processor more expensive than 20 euros, I think, or 30 euros. It's just like
you're one of those that has the magic touch of finding amazing things.
It's sometimes you need to be at the right place at the right time to just like find that stuff. And yeah, I bought my first processor when there was no sign of impossible even continuing 8x10.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
Yeah. So
that was a leap of faith.
I was actually lucky to get it.
Yeah.
And I know some older photographers from Austria that still had like a lot of analog stuff and equipment standing around in the studio. And yeah, so I kind of asked them always, do you maybe have some one of these plastic things with Polaroids written on top? Maybe it's like, it looks
somewhere?
Like a big printer.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I think I have something like that standing around somewhere. It's close to that enlarger that I never use.
Oh, like, great. Yes. Take it off
I'll
your hands.
I'll take it off. Yeah, I'll take it off.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you can have it. I just wanted to throw it away kind of thing. Like, yeah. But there have to be a lot of them around, actually, because it was used quite a lot.
Yeah.
8x10, but 8x10 in Polaroid is, for me, it's like the most magic format. I mean, if you're into 4x5, you already know it's like really interesting to have a picture that you don't need to enlarge anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like it's at that point, in my opinion, where you can display it and say, okay, that's fine. I wouldn't display a contact sheet of a 35mm film.
No.
Right.
No.
It's like a little bit
too small. Wouldn't even be able to see it.
Yeah. But like with Polaroid, from 4x5 to 8x10, you have this size where you say, okay, that can actually be framed and be looked at from a distance and people see something. And if you go closer, you see details, you see the flaws of the film maybe. A lot of my 58 film that has that like this orange bar just through it. I don't know why it's always at the same position. Ooh. It's like, yeah, okay, good. That's the specialty of that film.
Great.
Yeah.
Film is amazing. It's like, yeah. It's like,
yes.
We agree.
Yeah, it's just like an amazing idea to always get something different, to always be surprised by a film.
Mm-hmm.
With these expired Polaroids, you really have different results. I have the same pack and one image comes out yellow, one comes out bluish, and I'm like, okay, let's go with the flow.
It's like a surprise every time. Like, what's it going to be?
Exactly.
We'll be right back with some questions for Marco right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code ANALOGTALK10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, now it's time for the tough questions. So, Marco, desert island camera. You can only choose one, even though I'm sure we'll choose like seven while we're talking about this, because there's that's just how it goes. But what's your desert island camera? What can't you live without?
Desert island camera. Tough question.
It's awful. I hate this question.
Yeah. I mean, you have to break it down.
Everybody says that, like, okay, this is my medium format. This is my...
I was actually even thinking, like, the format I love the most is 8x10. So
okay,
that would be one thing I would bring there. But if we are on a, stranded island, I would probably go for the 20x24 because you can actually use it as a house.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Or like a boat.
Yes.
Use it to like,
it's like
get
you
off
have
the
so
island.
Much wood and material, you can build whatever out of that camera. You can use
best
the steel rollers to kill stuff. So
that's so good. I love that.
So if it's about surviving, I take the 20x24 every minute.
Yeah.
Just with the negative material of 50 meters, you can build everything. You can build a sail. So yeah. 20x24 is the way to go for surviving on the island. And maybe killing yourself with the work you have to do with taking pictures.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Burning your skin off. Yep.
Yeah. If it's really about like photography, which camera I kind of like love the most or use the most, it's a hard choice at the moment for me between the S670 with the open S670 mod. Actually, so you have manual control and regular S670, And between the camera, the RF70 from Mint at the moment, I really...
Oh, wow.
Nice. Loved, cool.
Like, really fell in love with this camera, to be honest. Like, it does a good job for what I do. And it really takes me to some new creative levels with the Instax film, because I'm not caring that much about the film. Because I know it's just brightly, like, broad available. I can get it for cheap money. I can just mess up a lot of shots with ideas and don't care that much about it, and like figure out new ideas and techniques.
That's interesting to think that like you're limiting yourself because of cost of film and weird elements like that.
Yeah, it's like Polaroid is limiting. It really limits you in your creativity, because you never know what you kind of you expect what you will get, but you can't be certain what you get.
Right.
That's something with Polaroid that also creates the magic of it.
Right.
But at the other hand, like if you're into conceptual photography, into like longer projects or anything, you kind of want to have consistency. You kind of want to have like, you know what's coming out of the camera. And at that point, I prefer Instax, to be honest. Mm. I am really not a big fan of the Instax colors or the Instax look.
Yeah. Right.
But we have filters. People used filters.
Yeah.
Sure.
Why
sure.
not take an orange gel and put it in front of your lens to get a warmer tone of that film?
Mm-hmm.
And we're done. We are at the same level at Polaroid. It's maybe not that like creamy or like looking like an oil painting, the Instax, but you have a little warmer tone. You can like do crossing and stuff like that. You can do a lot of things with Instax. The only thing which completely drives me crazy that I haven't figured out a way to manipulate that film. As we were talking, I loved Immersion Lift. That's like, it's amazing to have your hands on that film, to move it around, to give that film a completely different look. But damn, that Instax film is just there. It's done.
Right.
you are stuck with that one finished image. Mm. So with Polaroid, you have to step after the film, which is creativity in doing something with the Immersion. With Instax, maybe you've seen the video of me cutting stuff into pieces. Where I do like this panoramic shot of the train, for example.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Where
I love
took,
that
like,
video.
Five pictures of a train, just cut it into pieces and then stitch it together. So you have like a really wide Instax shot.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something you can do with Instax, because you can just cut that thing like nothing and do what you want. And yeah, so that's the Instax thing is something that gives me a bit more of like a spark in the creativity at the moment. Because with Polaroid, I kind of know where it is, and I kind of tried most of the creative techniques already. So I'm always like pushing myself to find something new. And that's, at the moment, it's mostly tinkering, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's 3D printing, like trying to like dismantle cameras, build new cameras, build stuff. And yeah, on the other side, like I need to find new creative techniques, since I think that these are one of the videos that like work best in my channel, or that people really love on my channel. But it's hard to find these creative techniques with when you're stuck with something. So yeah, that's like what I kind of wanted to show. So that's why one of the videos will be the 180 degree double exposure, talking a little bit more about double exposure, how you actually do one, and what to have to keep in your mind when you take a double exposure. Because there's a lot of things you have to think about when doing it. It's not that you just like flip the camera, take a picture and done. Because then you will mess up a lot.
Right.
So yeah. So these are the reasons why I kind of struggle between Polaroid and Instax. At the moment, mostly shoot Instax film and just go for that. And why the fridge is still full of Polaroid material.
I think they both have their own like place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's really great about them.
The good thing is it's competition. Competition drives business.
That's right.
So
very true.
Yeah, that's something I really love, is that Polaroid has a counterpart that's pushing them to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they will die.
Right. No, hopefully not.
Yes, but like, it's not meant in a bad way. But like, they need to be pushed to kind of not stay at the level where they are, and like, they need some development in their film. They need some thing, and like, because people just starting to get into like analog photography, maybe start out with Polaroid, they are frustrated by a color film that takes like 10 minutes to develop, because they don't understand it. Why? Maybe know that from back then or from Instax. It's just you take the picture, 1 minute later you have the image.
Right.
And yeah, that's where Polaroid kind of needs to step up the game. And I haven't seen a lot of changes in their film in the last 2 years.
Their black and white film is flawless, though. Like, I love the black and white film to death.
For me, for example, black and white is a little bit too contrasty. I enjoyed it way more when it before.
See, I'm into that. I'm into that.
So I really enjoyed that, like, soft black and white before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now it's super contrasty, and you kind of can't stop that developing process, which annoys me. Because, like, I would love to separate it when it's, like, you know, it has this softness peak, and then it's that's at the point where, like, I want that image, and then it starts to developing, and it's like contrasty, and it's like, oh fuck me. I had beautiful, like, really nice subtle tones of the body, and then it's like, oh nice, I have a black and white body.
yeah.
But yeah, if you like that feeling, it's amazing. It's the film you want. It's just like taste.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Why do you buy a Kodak Portra compared to a Fuji Provia? Different skin tone colors, maybe Asian people look different on that film than like Caucasian. It has some like, it is like that. Films were developed to show the skin tones of the region.
Yeah.
To work better for them.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
So why is why do we all look a little bit reddish on Fuji film?
Yeah.
I
always look red.
Never thought about that.
Yeah, because it's not our skin type.
Wow.
But yeah, so this is there's the second part to this question.
Okay.
So what is your white whale camera? That is the camera that you're... Is there anything that you're lusting after right now that you want, that you haven't had a chance to get yet, or that you're looking at, that you've always wanted?
That I've always wanted, and that's already existing, or is it like...
Yeah.
That's a tough one, because... I already, like, succeeded in the dream of shooting 20x24.
Yeah, you're lucky.
I am one of the rare ones to be lucky to say that's done. So
yeah, that's crazy. I can't believe that. Yeah, I'm jealous. So
there is actually no camera that I'm like, oh, I need to shoot that, actually. There is cameras that I kind of want to build.
Okay.
So that's more of the part where I kind of say, like, okay, that's something I kind of want to start and jump into. And continue to work on, but there hasn't been a camera that I say I need to get my hands on, to be honest.
Well, that's good. We need more pioneers. So whatever you,
yeah, I love what you're doing. Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, like as we were talking, like the Diana here, that's the Lomography Diana Instax Square, or Diana Instant, which is one of the cheapest square Instax cameras at the moment. And I'm kind of just to try to tinker and build just a module that I put on top here. You need to, like, just, I kind of want to make it as basic as possible. So just screwing off stuff and maybe soldering two wires, because you need to do that.
They
actually released the image. So that's two pieces, and I kind of want to make it as easy as possible. Release the plans under CC0 so everybody can just, like, use it, print it if you have to, or like sell it. That's because I don't want to hold back on like patents or stuff like that. I don't love that thing. It's like, just if you have the option to get one, try to assemble it yourself. And yeah, then having the chance to shoot Instax Square on medium format, it's like the dream for a lot of people of us.
That's going to be so cool.
So yeah, that's one idea that I'm kind of like, shoot square Instax on medium format. The other one is to build a square back for 4x5. Not square, Instax wide back for 4x5. That would be good.
I would love that.
Just to have the control if you're shooting sheet film. I need one Instax shot before. Okay, put the ND filter of 4 stops on to your to your desired ISO of film. Take one test image. Okay, the Instax looks good. Let's shoot the sheets and we are good to go. Or use your Instax sheets as the final product. However, you want to see. Producing a 4x5 back is actually pretty hard, because you need to kind of think about the distances of the film and everything. So all the mechanism of ejecting the image. In my opinion, it would need to be a holder that just has the film pack.
Yeah.
Which you then put into a processing unit, where you put like that hole into a processor, and that processor actually then does the ejection of the film.
Yeah.
Because that could actually work.
Yeah.
because then you don't need the whole mechanism or the electronics, the pushing pin and everything in that bag. You just like have a second thing where you put it on top and that actually does the processing. Like the 8x10, it's the same process. Mm-hmm. You have a film holder, yeah, you put it into the processor, it does the job. And yeah, that's like stuff I kind of like look forward at the moment to develop more of that. I hope I have more time to do it. I finally got this 3D printer, it's working. Which, like, it's like really annoying if you got like a 3D printer that you thought would be amazing and it's just like taking off time and time and every print fails and stuff like that, where you have like plans and drawings that you need to test and it's just messed up because of a production tool that holds you back. And now I got this amazing printer, which was super expensive, but it works great. And I can't wait to just prototype.
And you're going to put it to good use. That's good.
Yeah. Just like it's running 24/7 at the moment.
That's awesome.
Man, totally turned off fantastic. For the podcast now.
We're slowing down production, guys.
Yeah. No problem. It's getting late in Austria anyway, so production will end today. But yeah, that's like, I really don't have that one camera that I kind of want to shoot anymore. It was the 20x24 before, and since I was operating it and been to the craziest locations with that camera, I'm like, fine. Like, shooting a 20x24 in the desert of Qatar is like, okay, I've been there, done that.
Wow.
What a dream.
Yeah,
that's really my cool. dream. Yeah. I definitely need to
believe
make
me.
That
it's
happen
not
before.
It's not your dream to shoot that camera in the desert.
No. I'm sure. No,
it's not light tight at all. It's not meant to be in the desert.
Oh sure. No.
And yeah, it was a crazy job, but it was really interesting to just see all that and just everyday bug fixing from a ripped off bellow, from the like stand, like everything, from light leaks everywhere, from like t-shirts that are just dripping from sweat because you have to work that.
Oh, like, man.
And like the person who actually wanted to shoot in the desert, he has just such a fast pace of shooting. So you were like, okay, a 20x24 every 5 minutes, like go.
Oh, damn.
And it's like, okay, I need a break. I'm
how exhausting.
Dying. Yeah, that's for like 2 weeks, you're done. You're just like, your body and mental state is just like, okay, need a break.
I bet.
But yeah, and also like sand is not that nice.
No, sand is not nice to anything.
Yeah,
sand especially cameras.
Yeah, it's like the bellows still have sand inside of it. Like to this day, because you can't really get it all of it.
Still shaking it out.
Well, it's a nice memory.
Exactly.
But yeah, we managed to, like, after the bellow was ripped out, we managed to fix that with just gaffer tape in the middle of the night. And camera worked on the next day again, which
beautiful.
I didn't think it would be possible. But
jeez.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's crazy things that happened with that camera. And like, yeah, I love to have had that opportunity to do it, actually.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So at the moment, it's more like, which camera do I take today? And it's like, yeah, let's take the RF70 because it's the most handy at the moment. And it's just like, it works. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to film photography, but I like film roll film photography and like 35mm because I want to do more on the channel. But there is no camera on film that there is no Leica that I say I need to use, or there is no like medium format. I need a Hasselblad. I had a Hasselblad. It was a Hasselblad. Okay, good. It takes nice images. But it's a camera. It's just a tool of work, to be honest. There's like 30 tools of work in that room just to be used when you need it.
Right.
But I think a technical part should never hold you back in the creativity.
Right.
It should like support you to realize like what you want to create. But it doesn't matter if you have the crappiest point and shoot or if you have the most expensive Leica camera.
Yep.
If you have the right angle, if you have the right thinking of idea, you will get the shot. Mm-hmm. And it will not make a difference for the viewer. No viewer will be there. Did you shoot that with a Leica? And it's like, no, it was the cheapest point and click throwaway camera. And yeah, it's like, you also can mess up a Leica shot with a little bit of unfocus, like if you don't make the focus. So
true.
Don't get yourself stuck in camera or gear stuff or stuff like that. Yes, if you want to shoot 8x10, you need the equipment, but you can build an 8x10 camera for out of cardboard.
I've seen it.
A pinhole camera is the easiest thing you can ever build. And it's the most amazing thing. And if you have the chance to, if you have a room that's like has only one window or like two, take some black cloth or just like black paper, darken the window and cut a hole into the window of like 2 centimeters, and then just lay on the ground in your room for like 10 minutes and you will be lying in your own pinhole camera.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Actually on your ceiling, the outside, like upside down. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the most amazing feelings I ever had. Like we had this huge classroom where we actually darkened all the windows. We cut a 3 centimeter hole into the window. And the nice thing was in front of that classroom, there was a roundabout. So everybody was lying on the ground for like 10 minutes till your eyes actually start to kind of like get to that level where you see the stuff again, and like really, really clear. And suddenly you saw cars driving on the ceiling.
That's so cool.
It was so beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful moments I can remember regarding photography, and that just immediately makes clear every picture is actually mirrored in the camera. Mm-hmm. It's upside down.
Yeah.
And that's really cool to have that experience. So if you have the chance, just take some black paper, completely darken the room, like light tight, one little hole, and you're sitting in your own camera.
That's a camera obscura, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a pinhole camera. Yeah.
Love it.
A big pinhole.
big.
Yeah. Or like, just like to try it out, take some cardboard, make a box out of it, put one sheet of film inside.
I did that in high school.
It's
I did too.
Such an amazing process to understand that you don't even need a glass lens. You need a little small hole
light.
To do that.
All you need is light.
Yeah. It's
love it.
And you can make the craziest projects. I have like from that workshop where we did that, I built a 30x40 centimeter cardboard camera. So huge format. But it only took me like 1.5 hours to build it.
Yeah.
Cardboard, gaff tape, one can of Coke.
There you go.
There you go. You make yourself a little frame for the film. Like, and we didn't even shoot on film. We shoot on PE and made contact prints from the PE.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Easy as that, and you have a 30x40 centimeter original image. Which whoever has a 30x40 centimeter camera, like a 11x or 10x12 camera, nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah. So,
wow.
It's super easy and you can get just crazy results, and also try like multi-exposure with pinhole camera. That gives you trippy stuff.
Oh, yeah. Can imagine.
I did that one image on that roundabout where there was 4 streets going away from it, and I just shot 1 exposure in every direction. And that image looks really nice because the statue in the middle of the roundabout had like these pointy square thingies out. So every shot looks like an hourglass because at the end you had the street with the sky above and the buildings. And now you had like 4 streets combining to a crazy double exposure or like quadruple exposure. And at the bottom you always had this star form. It's like, it's one of my favorite images.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And even though I did only like 3 exposures with that camera, like all of them turned out to be unique. For me, pieces of art for myself. Maybe somebody else doesn't see it, but for me, that was like art coming out of that cardboard box.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like perfectly engineered stuff that has aperture control, shutter control, automatic modes, like ejection mechanism. All that fancy shit is gone. It just strips you down to the basics.
Yeah.
And that's...
You inspired me to do one of the pinhole cameras I did in high school.
Yes,
it's a good idea. I need to go back to that.
Just
get some paper.
Yeah, or like there's a lot of people just building them out of cans, you know? Like take a big can, punch one hole
oatmeal
in there.
Can.
The film is like bowed and like... Just start doing these easy things again.
Right.
And like, you know how easy it is to make an instant pinhole, like instant photography pinhole? Just take your frame of Instax film, put it into a cardboard, take it into a dark place, put it into a camera, check the image. You have an instant shot taken with a pinhole camera. You don't need to think of flattening it because it's already in the film holder and everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't know where it is, but at one point I made like a laser cut template for a slide together box. So it's like 2 boxes that you slide together, which actually perfectly hold an instant film pack. So you just go to the dark room, put it out, put in the camera, put it back in, and you have another shot for pinhole.
Damn.
Super easy. And you don't even need to go to the dark room. You need a little changing bag and a camera.
There you go.
It's like yeah, that's even possible to take with you. It's not a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Well, this has been amazing, Marco. We're so glad we got a chance to,
to really fun
chat and hang out and be nerds. This has been awesome.
Yeah, that was a pretty nerdy one, I guess.
That's the best. We love it.
Yeah, that's the best part of this thing.
So where can everybody check you out? Do you have a website? I don't think I already asked you that.
No, website not, but like just check out the YouTube channel. It's called Analog Things. Analog, not O-U, not E at the end. As basic as possible. And yeah, just check out the YouTube videos. Check out the creative processes. I think that's something everybody can profit from. If you want to see how a 20 by 24 works, there's actually two videos. One is from the camera in Vienna and one is from the camera in Berlin. So we kind of see the difference between the two cameras. And check out the YouTube channel. That's the most important thing. I'm also on Instagram, but I'm the laziest person on Instagram.
You and me both, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't be mad if there's like no content on Instagram from like I'm such a lazy person when it comes to Instagram. I don't know why.
That's okay. We like your YouTube channel. Stick to that.
For sure. Yeah, let's stick to the YouTube channel.
Yeah. So, Timothy, where can everybody check you out?
Guys, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Timothy Makeups. I also make film photography related YouTube videos. You can just search Timothy.makeups on there as well. There's a bunch of old greatest hits episodes have been floating around there for a while, but I do have I have some Polaroid Week stuff started that's going to be released on Polaroid Week, and I have there's a couple other things that I have going on, so that's where you can find me. Chris, where are you at, and where are we at?
We are at Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, Analog Talk Pod on Twitter. I am Crispy Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.
Yay.
And we have a Facebook page and a group too.
Yeah, so join it.
Join
like
us on
it,
Facebook.
Whatever you do.
All right, Marco, thanks again. Like I said, this has been awesome nerding out with you. This has been absolutely wonderful. We love your channel. Keep doing your thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks.
And yeah.
Will be a short break when you see that or hear that, actually.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's having a baby. He's going to be a daddy.
It's on the way. So, yeah, that's going to be the biggest project now. But
Your big project.
But, yeah, photography will not die. It will be there. Yeah. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you very much for having me. And I hope to see you or hear you soon.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, guys, first off, we want to thank Marco, Mr. Analog Things, for being on the show. Man, it was so great getting to talk with you, getting to pick your brain about Polaroids, especially during this week of Polaroid Week 2019. Yeah, that's crazy. And then that's going to take us to the Patreon. Guys, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. There's a bunch of stuff over there. You can support the show by donating $1 up to $25. We got prints over there. We're doing after shows. We're doing live streams. We're doing a bunch of fun stuff. We're really trying to work on narrowing down what you guys want. So feel free to shoot us messages if you're already a Patreon. Feel free to shoot us a message if you're interested in being a Patreon. And any little bit helps. For all the Patreons who already support the show, guys, thank you so much. You definitely free up some time for us to make this possible during the week. Also, if you could head over to iTunes and hit subscribe and leave us a 5-star review, that would be amazing. It definitely helps the show get out there to be heard, to be seen by more eyes, and you know, that would be great. We're loving to grow this show. Thanks so much, guys, and we'll see you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.